Dennis, remember when getting to the internet mean the dial-up, and you had that long,
that lovely noise.
Yes.
Yes.
And you thought we thought we had something there. Didn't
oh
we?
Yeah, we thought this was it.
This was it. Then DSL came and was like, "Oh, you don't have DSL. Oh, I'm sorry, you're behind time."
Yeah. And then,
right. Well, my, how the internet has changed a lot of things. Yesterday, the Federal Communications Commission approved what's known as net neutrality in a 3-3-2 vote. This ruling, Dennis, was classified that the internet is a public utility, and this is an action that FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler called necessary to preserve a, quote, fast, fair, and open internet.
Now, if you're like me, you understand the words, but you have no idea what's behind it or what this is all about. So to help us understand all of this, we have with us in the studio Ellen Zagura. She is a professor at the Georgia Tech School of Computer Science. Her research focuses on the development of internet services. Welcome. Good to have you.
Thank you, Dennis. It's very nice to be here.
So, okay. Let's start with exactly what net neutrality means and what it might mean for, I mean, you're not here to take sides in the debate. Before we hear from the advocates, you're here to educate us. So tell us what net neutrality means and what the debate is all about.
Okay. So when you think about the internet and think about network neutrality, a good starting point is to realize that all the information that gets sent over the internet is sent in bits, zeros and ones.
Right.
Doesn't matter whether it's a movie you're watching, an email you're sending, checking whether schools are closed tomorrow. It all comes down to being sent in zeros and ones. And when it gets to your computer, it gets translated then into something that's meaningful for you to look at.
Okay.
So what network neutrality means is that all of these bits are going to be treated the same. So internet
by the providers,
by the internet service providers. So those that are responsible for making sure they get delivered from wherever they started out.
So whoever you pay to get your net service from has to treat a Netflix movie the same as an email from your maiden aunt.
That's exactly right.
And it doesn't matter whether or not you're on the internet every day or just once in a while.
That's right. That's right. It means that the bits that are being sent are sent in a way that doesn't, it's application independent. It doesn't pay attention to what it is that those bits are going to be part of, either while they're being sent or after they arrive to you. There's an analogy that I read that I liked, which has to do with what it might be like when we think about the water, the systems that deliver our water. They don't treat it differently whether we're using that water to wash the dishes or fill the swimming pool. And it's similar to that. If we have systems where the pricing or the treatment of the bits depends on what they're used for, it would be somewhat like if you had water that got delivered, and if you used it for the swimming pool, you paid one price or you got it in one fashion. And if you were using it to wash dishes, you did something different.
Now, I am going to ask your personal opinion about this, though. Do you think the internet should be viewed as a utility, or would you rather not?
I think that's a complicated question. I think there are undeniably tremendous utility and value and even almost essential nature to the things that people now do over the internet. And so in that regard, all the efforts to make it accessible, available, and relatively open, I think, are ones that I support, and I think most people do.
Because one would argue, well, a utility, it's a necessary, it's a quality of life, where the other argument is you don't need the internet to survive. Well, now, if you're my 15-year-old nieces and nephews, you do. But for some, they would say, well, I need water, mm-hmm. and for most cases, I need electricity, but don't need the internet to survive, so it shouldn't be a utility. But I can see both sides here.
Yeah, I think one of the things that happened was that the FCC tried putting in place some network neutrality rules that that then were challenged by Verizon and were in fact overturned. And by reclassifying the internet to be under what's called Title II rather than Title I, which does mean under the utility kind of category, they're protecting themselves. That is, the FCC is protecting itself from some of the kinds of challenges that were successful before.
So in other words, was the FCC saying, look, we can't differentiate between providers without getting challenged. So we'll just say this is a utility and everybody has to play by the same rules because it's too hard for us and possibly too difficult legally to come up with a system that would please everybody if we don't have it classified as a utility.
Well, that's right. I think they previously made some efforts to prevent providers from doing things like discriminating bits based on what they were for. But because it was classified under this Title I, they were subject to what was a successful lawsuit on the part of Verizon. So the lawsuit opportunities are reduced in some ways by having it classified as Title II, although that doesn't mean we won't see some lawsuit attempts for sure.
Professor, let me ask you this. How much do you think a lot of this also because of the popularity of streaming? Mm-hmm. You know, maybe 10 mm-hmm. years ago, it was like, oh, you stream a few things. And Quickster, I'll be honest, I once said, I don't think people will listen to anything over the internet. But I was young and you know, young and dumb. But
we are streaming live right now.
Yes, we are. How much do you think that the popularity of streaming has played into all this?
I think it's played a role. There's a significant economic component to the various positions on this issue. It's true that the internet service providers have put a lot of investment into getting the pipes laid and the wireless networks in place so that we can receive internet and so that we can receive streaming video.
Will net neutrality, though, mean that the providers will get things to you any more slowly than they could if they had gotten what they wanted?
That's probably subject to opinion. I don't think you'll see any difference. Rose asked me earlier when Orange is the New Black, the new season comes out, what's going to happen to her experience? And I feel pretty comfortable saying it won't be noticeably any different than her experience of the previous season.
So the current buffering that I have will just still continue.
Yes, whatever you've got, you probably will continue to see. Well, now, the providers may argue that if they were allowed to build these so-called kind of pay-for-play or fast lanes, that they would have the potential to improve your watching experience for things like streaming. You know, that's a fairly hypothetical
argument. But are we at a point now where, okay, if it takes 16 seconds to download, it's going to be any worse than if it took 15 or 14 seconds to download?
I think that's a great point. The providers have basically built out capacity that is intended to make sure that your experience is pretty good, even without these special fast lanes.
What about your opinion in terms of what this means for competitors out there? Because now that if everyone has to, so to speak, be on the same playing field, do you think the competition now will sort of have to pull back what services they're offering and sort of saying, well, you know, with this now, we need to offer something different, offer something, you know, that maybe our competitor isn't offering. You know, we got Google Fiber coming to Atlanta. So do you think the competitors have to sort of go back to the drawing board and say, okay, we've got to do something different now?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think this does restrict a set of opportunities that providers might have had as a way of making a business case or making a sales pitch. So they will, they will have to look at some other kinds of ways that they can both get revenue for valuable services and structure services.
Will it have any effect on some of the developments we're seeing here in Atlanta, like Google Fiber and that sort of thing, when it comes to delivery of what could be a pretty sophisticated wireless service?
I don't think it will have any impact on the plans to lay infrastructure like Google Fiber. I wouldn't expect to see that. There may be some implications further down the road, particularly in areas that have had a hard time getting competition in terms of internet service providers and frankly getting distribution. That is, places that still don't have broadband because typically they're rural and remote.
So now that the feds have come in with this, and we've been hearing about this for a few years now, is there anything else on the horizon that we should be looking to? Because it seems like that was the focus with the internet. But now have we sort of surpassed all of the potentially big, bad, ugly things about the internet now? Can we all just enjoy our internet and live happily ever after?
I wouldn't recommend you get too comfortable. Certainly we know that issues of security and privacy are huge and are really not particularly impacted by this ruling. I do think the fact it was a 3-2 decision and a party line decision means that it's not a slam dunk that it will remain as is.
Come the 2016 election, for instance,
absolutely.
If there's a party change, this could change too, perhaps.
That's exactly right.
And meanwhile, Congress has jumped in. Georgia Senator David Perdue is one of the first to come out in a statement and say this is too much government regulation. But is there anything, I know your expertise is technical rather than legal or certainly constitutional law, but can we expect Congress to sort of push back on this? Is this the final word, do you think?
So I don't think it's the final word, and I think there will be a variety of voices that show up in defense of giving freedom to business, trying to relieve them from regulation. So it won't be the final word. I'm sure we'll see more out of Congress. We'll see potentially more out of the FCC, especially if we see a changeover in administration.
Let's talk about, there's still a concern about internet services to underserved communities, those living in rural areas, and sort of the push to make sure that if we're going to be a country built on technology, and you know, we're always talking about what a great country this is in terms of technology and advancements, but there's still a portion of our society that are being lost on all this. So what do you think needs to happen to make sure we reach those populations as well, if we all want to be connected?
Right. I think it's incredibly important. It's expensive. It's an economic issue, and trying to make sure that it's economically viable for those who are in a position to get internet into these communities, I think, is something that that's really key. And
particularly for children.
That's right. Getting into schools, getting that kind of access to information, really vital for our next generation.
So will this ruling make it easier or harder for that to happen, to get to those underserved communities or to those kids?
I think it's not quite clear yet. I think there's a hope that it will provide some push to help make that happen, but we'll have to wait and see.
Now, Professor, before you leave, you are the person that you're going to have this answer, and whatever you say, it's going to stand. Who invented the internet? Because I've heard about 15 different people. Dennis said his grandfather. I don't know. Who?
Is Al Gore your grandfather?
Not the last time I checked, anyway.
That's a topic for a good long conversation, both technical and political.
It still continues. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
It.